Hi, I'm Jerry Ellis, host of Talking Apes, and this is a spoiler alert. You won't get many of those on Talking Apes, but you're about to hear one of four podcasts in our exclusive Talking Apes World Chimpanzee Day celebration. As we take a deep dive into the making of Chimp Empire, the new Netflix nature docuseries, we will go behind the scenes with the folks that made it. So before listening much further, I really encourage you to watch this extraordinary four-part series, Chimp Empire, and then come back to our exclusive Talking Apes World Chimpanzee Day event, where we'll dig into the details of the characters and the events creating this amazing series. Okay, there's your spoiler alert. You've been warned.
Who are we? How did we become the way we are? As humans, we spend our lives trying to understand ourselves. But sometimes it feels we're too close to see clearly. That's why we love stories from other worlds. And the world of chimpanzees, so similar to ours in some ways, but so different in others. Tells us stories more revealing than you can imagine. Stories all the more powerful because they are real.
Welcome to our exclusive Talking Apes Behind the Scenes podcast series on the making of Chimp Empire, the extraordinary Netflix four-part docuseries unlike any nature film you have ever seen. This episode features my conversation with local Ugandan Diana Kanweri, the first female field research assistant in the 30-year history of the Ngogo Chimpanzee Project. But it was Diana's love for filming that drew the attention of Ben Saad, director of photography. Recognizing her potential as a young camera operator, Diana became a valuable asset to the filming team, and multiple scenes within the final series include her film work. Chimp Empire captures in astonishing film detail the complex lives of the largest wild chimpanzee group known, over 200 chimps living in the secluded Ngogo rainforest of Uganda's Kibale National Park. Stunningly filmed and thoughtfully written, and narrated by Academy Award-winning actor Mahershala Ali, the story centers around alpha male named Jackson and the chimp community of Ngogo's central group. Chimp Empire moves between moments of great tenderness and intimacy of family life to the violent brutality of all-out war. It's a story of individuals, too, each one unique in character, each with their own ambition, hopes, and fears, of friendships forged and of loyalties lost, of societal hierarchies and benefits and struggles that come together with such an intelligent and emotional ape like us. Before joining Diana for our conversation, just a brief recording note. After several lost connections over several days, Diana was kind enough to travel outside the Ngogo forest to a village on the edge of Kibale National Park. From a local rooftop, she managed to get a strong enough signal to record our conversation. And in the background, you'll also hear a lovely chorus of local birds that shared our podcast. And now my conversation with Diana Kanweri. Hi, Diana, and welcome to Talking Apes. I'm really delighted that you are here and that you could make it and we can finally get a connection.
My pleasure to be here, and I'm really excited to have this talk with you. I love chimpanzees, and working with chimpanzees is like finding my new life. And yeah, so happy to share this part of me.
Well, this is fantastic, and the reason that we discovered you is because of your work on Chimp Empire, this new film that's on Netflix, and you have a really interesting backstory, and that's why I wanted to start with that and how you got to be in Kabali and how you ended up on the film. Can we start with you talking about that?
I was born in Fort Portal, that's like 40 kilometers away from Kabali, and I always wanted to work with animals too. So I thought maybe I would be a guide, tourist guide. So that would be a way for me to get to work with wildlife. And it didn't come quite straight like I wanted it, but in the end, it did. I started as a guide at there's a wetland just outside of Kabali National Park. So where there are lots of primates actually. So I guided there and birds. Then from there, I got to come to work with chimpanzees. So my first time when I went to work with chimpanzees, I had all this imagination in my head of how the forest is. But when I reached, it was very, very different. I thought the forest was like this forest we see in films, you know, like the Indian forest, the forest you see. But when I reached, it was beautiful, huge trees, and it was beyond something I could ever imagine. And I loved it. I loved the way it was. And we went out with Professor Kevin Langraver, the director at Tingogo. He took us out, and we had shrimps call. And he was like, oh, there's a chimp calling there. And then he was leading us through this terrible grassland. There were thorns, but you know, we had to follow. And then finally we found chimps. And then there were these many chimps, they were resting. And then he started by introducing each one. And then one name really like got my attention more. He said, this one here is Popeye. And he is the laziest chimp. And I was like, okay. I did not say anything, but I just wanted to know, why is he lazy? That's the question I didn't ask. But as I stayed in the forest for more days, I wanted to know, is he really lazy? And how lazy is he? And I did get to know Popeye. He became my favorite chimp. But I didn't find him lazy after a long time. I liked his personality instead. He was just calm. He was so clean. He liked being slow. But when time came, he was very active. Like, he decided to be slow. And whenever being active and was necessary, he was very active. And there are days when I thought, I was like, oh, today I need to have a simple day. So I was like, I will be with Popeye. But Popeye turned my day to be really not simple, like I wanted it. Yeah, we ended up walking. Like, I was like, I didn't think this was going to happen, Popeye. But it was just his personality, but he was everything all chimps were. And then this one time there was a patrol, just patrolling, and then they have the intergroup encounter. Popeye was right in front of the, like, in leading the other group. So I was like, huh, I'm proud of you. So you can even be this. So he had all the signs of other chimps, but his personality was just being calm, and he was just a nice chimp. So yeah, I've been now, like, ever since I joined there, being with the chimpanzees has been like finding a new person in me, because when I joined there, when I left my guiding to join the chimpanzees, it wasn't something that all women did, because I was the first one to ever start working in Ngogo as a research assistant. No female had been there before. And to me, I didn't think about it like it's not a woman thing, it's a man thing. Though I had some sounds in the back that said, what does she think she is? Women do not do this. No women work. No woman, women do not work here. But we went there. We were actually three ladies. By then, when we started for the interview, passed to be taken in. And then, so by the time I heard some guys say that, actually, they are not here to work. Women do not work here. Maybe they are looking for something else. Maybe they are looking for men. And I was like, I went and I told these guys, I was like, you know what? The next time they ask us if we are tired, we should just say, no, we are not. We are not tired. So they should think we can't do it. But it has been, to me, it hasn't been anything like I can't or no one can do it. I found some really courage and, motivated to be able to work with chimps. And knowing these chimpanzees, every chimp, the personality, like the way you get to know them, I know chimps more than I know my own family, because I've spent now, five years with them. Like, I know each individual. Like, I can tell what they think and how they feel, even if they don't really talk to us. I felt like I wasn't really like the way I wanted to be like, but when I stayed with chimpanzees and, looking at them and how they behaved and who they are, at one point I was like, I want to be like chimpanzees. They actually live this simple life. It's just they accept themselves, and I need to take this path as well. And I watched Kata most of the times when he was. Kata is one of the chimpanzees we have in Ngogo. He's really huge and he has a scary face, but he has a nice personality. He's nice inside. So I was like, he used to groom Jackson and then the other chimps who were the high-ranking ones, but they never groomed him back. So after giving him the grooming, he would just go on the side or start playing with kids or even play at rest, not mine. I was like, I think that's good. And he would do that. It's been a good journey for me. And like to know that today, I'm not the same person who joined Ngogo 5 years ago. I'm me and I take it and I'm happy. I think it's, I owe it to the chimps. Huh. Yeah.
What do you think is the biggest change in you over these 5 years? What do you think has changed most about you?
What has changed is believing in myself and, looking at the things I want to do and really working hard towards those things and not minding about other things and like what people will really think about what I can and what I can't do. So I think of what I want to do and go for that. And
so just confidence.
Confidence.
I'm curious what led you to, you took a filmmaking course.
Yeah.
What inspired you to want to become a photographer or filmmaker?
Before I joined Ngogo, I watched the documentary. I can't remember the name, but it was made in Masai Mara. It was about cheaters. And it was so beautiful. I loved how the story was about cheaters. So there, it was a family of cheetahs, the mother and whole family. So how they were able to live together, and then how their mother died and they kept together. So like, I loved it. And I was like, I want to do that. But more of it was the narrator, who I don't remember the name as well. And then I said I wanted to be a narrator because he spoke so well for it. So I was like, I want to be able to do that. So I went to, I shared it with one of the researchers in Ngogo, and then he was like, yeah, you can do it. He said, like, you can do it. And I was like, okay. So that's I went on a course to study wildlife and to study filmmaking, actually, but because there's no school that offers wildlife part of filmmaking in Uganda. So it was a general filmmaking course that I went to study. And so because I really, what I wanted was to major in wildlife. And so I didn't get that at school. And so, but I had a small recording camera that I used in the forest, so I could try to transition there from school to the forest, and then try to film chimpanzees and monkeys and everything that was around. Yeah, so I wanted to make the films, so I could also tell the same stories that I saw with the Maasai Mara documentary.
Wow, well, you made a huge jump to go from, you know, wanting to be a filmmaker to being part of one of the most incredible chimpanzee films ever made. I have to tell you, they'd be so excited about being a part of something like Chimp Empire. Was James Reed the one who selected you to work, to help with the filming, or was it someone else?
When the Chimp Empire team came in Ngogo, I was there, and so I was shy to be able to say that I'm studying this, so if you could give me any hope, it would be nice. I was shy, I didn't say it, but what I did was, and most of the times, I could be watching them film, and I see how they wanted to have their shots, so with my camcorder, I would wait until they are not around, and then try to get the same, first shoot the same way they were doing with their big cameras, because I had a very small camera. And until one day, I was early in the forest, and there were these chimps coming in a trail, and I set my camera there, but I knew, if I stayed here, these chimps are not going to pass here. So what I did was leave my camera set and then move on the side so they could come and pass before the camera. And then they did. And they did come and they passed there. After then, I came to look at my clip. So I was with another researcher. And after I showed him, he was like, hey, look what I got. And then he was like, hi, you need to show this to the Chimp Empire team. And I was like, I wanted to show it to them, but then I was like, I didn't want to be like, to make them think that I'm doing this behind their back, you know? I didn't want them to feel that way because I didn't know if it was the wrong or the right thing to do. So I told him, yeah, I would, but in there, I knew I wasn't going to. So he found me with them after like an hour. We were all together with the Chimp Empire crew, so in the forest. And then he asked me, Diana, do you show that to them? I had no answers. And then they were like, what? Showing us what? So I had to show them my video. And so Ben Saad was there. Ben Saad was there and Ben Sherry. So Ben Saad, when they saw it, Ben Saad was like, Diana, could we give you one of our cameras so you can try to play with it? Yes, I said, play with it. And I was like, sure. But then I don't know how to use your cameras. They're big. I've never used one like that before. And he said, yeah, you can play with it, actually. So he showed me when we went back to camp. I came to ask him if he meant giving me the camera or it was a joke. So he said, no. He brought the camera, showed me how to focus, how to record, and yeah, and zoom in with it. It was a C70 he gave me. And I started taking that camera out. It became another motivation for me to be out in the forest, to be with chimpanzees every time, because I wanted to be able to record something. And yeah, I never used to sit, so I had to try to find ways of making my shots really stable. And yeah, I didn't know what was really wanted, but it was just me there playing the camera. And then after like a week of me feeling like two cards in a week, so I then said, was like, should we look at what you have been getting? I was like, yeah. And then he did. We went through what I was capturing, and he liked some of them, and then he took a video of them on the computer and sent them to James Reeds. And then the following thing was James Reeds reaching out to me, and then said like, maybe you should would you like to come and be with the team for a month so they can teach you how to film so you could be there for us when we are not available in their breaks. But I was supposed to go to school. I said, I'm going to school, so I might not be able at the moment, but I'll be back after school. So my school was supposed to, I had to go there for a month. And then, yeah, so I came back. The camera was waiting for me when I came back. So actually didn't take the 1 month to be trained. So I kept on working on my own for all the time that the film team and everyone. So all the film crew were there to look at what I've done. So told me how to improve and how to be in best positions and how to capture. So they were all the time looking at what I was doing to help me to improve on it. Yeah, so everyone, all the team were so, so amazing in helping me do that.
Well, it seems we've lost Diana. So while we try to get her back, we're going to take a quick break while Diana tries to reconnect to the internet and take this opportunity to welcome in assistant producer Demelza Bond. Hey there, Demelza.
Hello, Jerry. Hello, listeners. So here we are, the final installment of our Chimp Empire series, and it's also the finale of Talking Apes Season 2. So what did you think, listeners? What was your favourite episode this season? And did we go out with a bang with the Chimp Empire collection? Earlier this week, I asked listeners to tell us something about Chimp Empire that surprised them. Jennifer Kalecki-Hone said, "I couldn't believe when the Westerners came to the border and let the mama and baby go. I know they chased her and scared her, but I was really surprised they didn't hurt her." Varro Dom said, "The setting really catches the eye. The result is a closeness and immersion among our cousins that is rarely felt." Beautiful comment, thank you. Annie Permana, who is an evolutionary biologist, says, "I've deconstructed over 200 orangutan nests, so would love to compare them to chimp nests. I've heard chimps don't add comfort elements to their nests, but in Chimp Empire, one clearly made a pillow." As I said to Annie, I've certainly seen chimps do that in captivity, but I'm not sure about the wild. However, we may have some chimp nest experts booked for next season, wink, wink, which kicks off in September. So have a look at our website, talkingapes.org, for a sneak peek at Season 3's upcoming guests. We'll be back before you know it, and in the meantime, we'll be focusing on some of our other great ape conservation programs that we run out of our parent nonprofit, Globio. If you've got an idea for a guest for Season 3, head over to talkingapes.org/contact and send us an email. I'll also be posting some blogs, links, beautiful photos of the Chimp Empire chimps, along with some of the gorgeous guests as well, on our website. Thanks for all the lovely comments and reviews you've sent in this season. It's been fab connecting with you all, and we're so proud of how much we've grown this season. We're getting literally hundreds and hundreds of listeners a month now, and we're just over the moon. Do stay in touch on social media during the summer break. I'll be active over there. And for now, back to Jerry.
Thanks, Demelza. And I would just like to add my own huge thanks for all the support and the sharing of this podcast. We're incredibly excited about the guests we have coming up in season 3. So join us September 24th. So join us September 24th as we kick off the new season of Talking Apes. And of course, until then, if you're new to Talking Apes, we have over 40 previous podcasts waiting for you to binge. So enjoy. Well, I see that Demelza is giving me the thumbs up. And so I guess we're reconnected to Diana. So let's get back to our conversation about her experience filming behind the scenes of the Chimp Empire. Well, you must have improved very quickly because Ben Saad, when we did the podcast with Ben Saad, he said that you captured many scenes that that they use in the film that were really wonderful. So can you tell us some of the scenes that you filmed that were in the final film?
Couple of them. I'm so proud of this. Like, I would say I wouldn't pick one, but maybe you can talk. So I can talk about some of them. So there's that one of Rich Virgo. It's in episode 2. I mean, like, yeah, in part 2. Rich Virgo, the chimp, he was lying down, and then a red diker. So I reached there when I found this chimp resting on a tree, and then a red diker looking at him, but in some really good distance. And then I was like, what's going on here? So I had this very wide lens on my camera, but then I wanted to have it maybe like a bit not too wide, that and like the one I heard. So I was like, what do I do in that moment? And I want to have this shot. So what was in my mind was, this diker is coming towards the chimp. So the chimp is definitely going to eat this diker. So if it's going to happen, I want to be able to capture this. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to be here and record whatever happens in whatever I have. So I stayed, I turned my camera on, and I did not move because I know how dikers are very shy. So I just stayed still and then started recording. The diker came slowly, slowly towards the chimp. But then I didn't know it was Rich Virgo. I knew it was a chimp because I couldn't see his face very well. And then what amazed me was seeing how the chimp was moving his hand to ask the diker to come and play with him. And then the diker slowly kept taking steps and then coming closer and then sniffed in his hands. And the chimp was there just doing his fingers. And I was like, what's going on? It was something I didn't understand. I was like, okay, I watched it happen and I kept recording, didn't move. I didn't do anything. I just stayed there. And after the other chimps were resting on the ground, when they started like moving a bit, the diker ran away. And then I was like, okay. I ran after, I went to Callum, and I was like, Callum was there. And that, there was like, Callum, I filmed. So after filming that, I realized the chimp was Rich Bubble. So I went to Callum, I was like, Callum's the producer. I said, Callum, I filmed Rich Bubble playing with the diker. And he was like, you're kidding. I was like, no, I got him. So I wanted to have a look at what that clip was, but I couldn't play it. But I was so much forward looking to that because it was something that was unusual. I expected to be like a hunt going to happen, but ended up like a strange behavior. Just Richard Bago is an adult chimp who would really grab that dagger and put it down, but instead he just decided to play. I think maybe he was weak and he just, by the time he was sick, so maybe he just wanted someone to play with, and the dagger was there, not afraid of him. Maybe he could really know that this chimp is not intending to eat me or anything, so I can just get close and, you know. That was a part that really, I still think that maybe it might never happen again. And then another part was, I got actually so many shots. So like Ben said, there were so many. And there's this one, it was in between. I got so much of the intergroup encounters. They happened a lot. That time I was there and I tried to be like, to be, I think like a chimp, if I should say. Yeah.
No, that makes total sense. You have to think like a chimp if you're going to, that makes total sense to
me. Started to be like, I have to think like a chimp because they had these patrols. They were frequent patrols. And just like, okay, it would happen today. So maybe miss a day and then happen the next day or miss a day or two. So I had to read that sequence of how it happened. And then I had to decide, like, if I have to take a day off, where should my day off be? Because I don't want to be off. And then something happens in the forest without me being around. So, like, I wanted to be there every time. So now, like, this day, I was out. And so the centralers they had moved on this, going to be their new boundary, but that was being under maybe the Westerns trying to claim it, like trying to overtake it. So, and the other team was in the west side. So we were in the central side and then the other researchers were on the west side. So, and then we had them on the radio. They're like, hey, we're actually coming towards you. And I'm like, which side? And then they're like, and this trial. And then I saw Peterson, the train. He got up and then he was like this. I was like, okay, Peterson, is something going to happen? I got to my camera. And then so it is that clip when we're in the trail. And then the chimps were up on two legs, looking like this, like trying to see on the other side of the hill. And then I had to be like, so where should I be here? I had to run to be in between the other side and this side and then to be able to see how they are reacting and what they are seeing. So I did get them. So it was Jackson, Peterson, Abrams, I think Cannonball. They were in this queue. They were in this line. So trying to look like this, to be like, okay, you know, like hugging each other, like, okay, are they coming? I got that. That was really amazing because of how it started when I was there having it. I liked it. And then that happened and I kept filming them and then they ran away when they saw the others coming. And then I stayed in the same trail. I filmed the others when they were coming up the hill running. I don't know if you remember that of them running up the hill. So I stayed there and then filmed those ones running up the hill. And I was like, okay, I got this. But that was an amazing because it was like a straight line. It was in a trail running on the hill. So I was up the hill and then we are coming down the hill. So I got that. And I was like, okay. You know how it happens when you have so many days in the forest and then you capture so many things and then you don't tell yourself that I have an amazing shot today. But then, and then some other days when you just have that one shot, and then you were like very happy. You're like, okay, I got this, I'm happy. So that's where I got those three shots. There are three shots, but it's just one day. I was like, okay, these are really good. And I'm happy they all made it to the final. Yeah, so the scientists too.
They're incredible in the final series. And as you were describing it, them standing up, I remember that scene, and it really is. There's something, you know, one of the things I think James and all the cameramen and stuff, I think they were trying to create was this connection between the chimps and us to show how the chimps are so much like us. And that scene is so interesting because the way they stand up, the way you captured it, where they're standing up and looking on two legs, it's almost haunting. It's a little bit scary to think about chimps like that, like in that way.
What's more scary is when you're in the middle of them, in the middle of this encounter, intergroup encounter, and then you want to film something, and then you find yourself. If you were on the other side, that's okay. But if you find yourself in the middle, you forget to think that now they think I am a human because you cannot recognize them at all. They look like three times bigger than who they are. You cannot now, they look darker than you usually do. Like, it's hard to be like, okay, this is Hutchison or this is Jackson in that very moment because they all look very, very different. And then now there you get scared and then you're like, okay, am I going to get out here safe or something? Because it happened several times when I was in the middle of them. So what I did was even forget about filming or recording anything. So I was just there like, okay, I don't understand what's happening, but I'm just going to stay here. Don't move so I shouldn't scare chimps, so they shouldn't end up hitting me. No, they wouldn't, but I think they, yeah.
No, well, that was a question I was going to ask you, if you ever got frightened or concerned being in the middle, especially when they're like in those scenes where the two groups come together. It's very chaotic. Chimps are flying around all over the place and they're throwing things at one another and they're grabbing trees and swinging. And was it ever, you must have been frightened on some occasions.
Yes, many, many times I have, because I had like a couple of encounters, like I said, like it was just 1 month that encounters happened several times and I was there every time they happened. And now there's this one day, we knew the Westerners were coming to attack the Centralers because we kept communicating, like because we have different people in both sides. So this day we knew the other side was telling us they were coming towards us, but the chimps in the central were really scattered. And then we weren't sure of was who are they going to reach out to, like who are they going to attack? So, and then I was like, in this position, it's good to be with the chimps who I know like this would be there when it happens. Like, would not run away or would come to rescue others if they attacked the others. So I was like, okay, Jackson is here. It was Jackson and Wilson, Peterson and Morton, Lovano. They were on this one side together. So I was like, this is a good group to have. So I will stick with these ones. And Kevin Lee, the researcher, was on the other side. So it's like, okay, I'll stay with Carter's group. It was like, okay, so we waited for whenever it was going to happen. So I was there. I saw Jackson. Jackson is very big. He was a massive chimp. So I saw Jackson get up. And then I was in a trial, like, obstructing him to be able to see far. I didn't know that I was. So I saw Jackson get up, puffs up, and then he's become like a gorilla, like a silverback. And then he started moving. And he was looking at me. So I thought he was looking at me, but he was looking actually through to the other side. And then I was this Brian, who is a research assistant then also. I was like, Brian, Jackson's coming to attack me. Because he was coming towards me, but then you can't scream, you can't run, you can't do anything to make them feel like you're scared. So I said, Brian Jackson's coming to attack me. And then Brian was like, no, I don't think so. And then I took one step and another step out of his way. But then I realized he was actually focused looking on the other side. And I didn't know what was happening behind us. But then I kept my camera trying to capture that. I was scared. I was nervous. I didn't get that part of him that I regretted later. So like, I wish I knew he wasn't coming to me and I captured that. But he was trying to see who was, I think he was seeing chimps that he was trying to be like, who are they? Are they my chimps or they're the other chimps? So. And then I saw this other chimps coming, following him. So I kept my camera there, filming, I don't know where it was. So, but I kept it there nervously. And then I saw Jackson take off. And then the other chimps all turned around. They all followed him. So I kept my camera following him running. And then the other chimps coming and shot through, like chasing them. The Westerners had come to chase them. And then they ran and then disappeared in the grass around. But I was so scared because Jackson has been, is a chimp you don't want to be charged by. Or if he was scary, his eyes were scaring. Like he communicated so much with his eyes, like you'd know he's actually furious if he was coming towards you. You know, like, okay, Jackson is coming towards me. I just have to give him space. I have to go out of his way. Yeah. Because he liked so much, yeah, he communicated that he's the alpha and he wanted everyone to know that he was the alpha.
I have two questions I want to ask you. One is if there were other moments that you said that you were at that moment, Jackson was coming, you didn't capture it with your camera. And I was going to ask you if there were other moments that you had that you really afterwards you went, oh, I didn't get that because some circumstance you didn't film that. I think every filmmaker has that. There's times when things happen and they realize something happened that they didn't get it on film. And you know, it kind of haunts them in their brains. It's like a dream that won't go away. They keep seeing that scene over and over and over again. Do you have one of those moments?
So that one of Jackson is one of those moments. I did it because I thought it would have been a very, very good shot to get. And then other moments where there's, what was the other moment actually? Because there were several. Think about that. It was always in this terrific, the chaotic part where I was there most of the time. And the hard part was being able to get whichever way it happened. So now this reminds me of this day when it was also an intergroup encounter and I was there alone with the camera, with other researchers, this time not with the film crew. So what happened was you could see, it's like you could see what was happening, but the problem was I didn't know what to do in that very moment. I had the camera, so I didn't know if I should keep following or, you know, like doing this. So I was like, I was supposed to stay still and watch everything happen. But then still your mind will be like, no, you should actually follow it or do it. So in the end, you're like, okay, you got the shot, but it's not the way you should have got it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, I know exactly what you mean. Yes.
Yeah. So like, it was a good environment with no much vegetation to stop me from filming. So, and then this encounter happened. So it was a pushing back and forth, like they are fighting, pushing going here and then going there and then pushing back and forth. And then I'm there, you know, there are always some trees, of course, in the middle. But then I was there now, like following them back and forth, back and forth. And then when I came back, so I think it was Ben who said, do you know this kind of what shots, you need to be in this kind of position so you can be able to get this kind of shot, because now when you see going on, we don't know where we should focus on, what we should see. Now I was like, okay, that was really good. Maybe it's, you know, the word, like it's a thing that happens today and you know, sure it will happen again, like in the same place. So the very best way it happened, it has happened. Yeah, so that was one of the shots I think I missed. I got, but not too really clearly.
Yeah, there's, well, trust me, for after many years of being a cameraman, there's, you always have shots you realized afterwards you should have been over here, or you should have been over there, or you should have used a different lens, or you should have, and they haunt you. They haunt you forever. But that's part of, that's the amazing opportunity that you have is, I mean, for someone like me to go all the way to Africa and film, and then I'm only there for a month or two. And that's the thing I think is so special about you becoming a camera person, is because you live there.
Yeah.
You live and you work there, and you see these things every day.
Yeah.
And you have an opportunity to film things that most of us would never ever see. That's a really unique opportunity, but it's also, do you feel like it's ever a responsibility?
No, to me, I love doing it. I think what helped me actually even do it the more is because I've taken time, like when I'm with these chimpanzees, without filming, I know every chimpanzee's personalities, and I know what they are likely to do in certain moments. So when I was having that camera, especially with the patrol staff and even the other moments of playing, so I would easily anticipate and then be like, okay, if it's patrol, who should I be with? Who is it likely going to start with? So I would be there. So I would choose. I'd be like, okay, who looks like today is going to be the leader? So it was always like, I knew, because for the few times it was happening, I knew it was either Rollins or Damien. So I would be like, okay, who do I need to keep my eye on if he leads? So if Damien led, I would make sure I'm ahead with Damien. So if the rest are coming, so I'm going to be able to capture them calm. So I try to run ahead and then be with Damien. I would try to really even get ahead of him. So because I knew the rest were going to follow. And there are also another part. I also like the part of Peterson playing with the Christian. Peterson was a very emotional thing. To me, he was like a human, because you could tell if he was worried, you could tell if he was excited, like he could tell if he liked something. Like he was the kind of chimp you would really read who he was. So now that part of him playing with Christian, like tickling each other and then trying to bite the toys, was really a good one. I just stayed there and then kept my camera, watched them play. It was more of enjoying them play while filming it. It was beautiful. And you know, when you're filming something, when in the camera you're able to see it very closely, and then you just see how it's happening. And later when you go back to look at what you filmed, it's beautiful. It brings actually more closure to what you're filming, and then the chimp behaviors, because sometimes you miss them if you don't film them. And then when you go back to see what you are filming, you notice things you didn't have noticed if you were not filming. So to me, it's something that I did that I loved to do it, because when I was doing it, it was more of like joy to do it. And yeah, I loved it. I loved it.
Do you think being a photographer, being a filmmaker, do you think that's made you a better observer of chimps?
Yeah, it has. Yeah, it has made me a better observer of chimps, because it makes me more of like not just follow, but think of what are they going to do next? You know, like not following and think whatever they're going to doing to do. So you're like, okay, I need to get a certain shot. How am I going to be able to get it? So it gets you to keep thinking beyond what is happening. So yeah, it has made me better. And I think I see chimps. I understand them. I think I do. And I feel that I wish everyone does. I think researchers do, and even the team that we work with do, and everybody who has got chances and opportunities to be with chimps for more than a month understand. But it is still this. I wish people outside this community do understand it the same way. Which, yeah.
So do you think when you go outside the forest, you go back to your community, or you're in Fort Portal or someplace, what do people think about what you do, about you being with chimps?
Because I talk chimps. When they ask me about chimps, I'm excited to talk about them because I love it. So they'd be like, huh. So they think that I'm spoiled, maybe. They think I'm spoiled, like, because I'm used to now spending more time with chimps. So they think it's maybe a bad voice to have, but I don't think so. But the more I talk to them, so they find it like, oh, it's something interesting that they actually get to listen. They want to know more. But, you know, it's always hard to tell someone to be like, oh, this happens and this happens. So they keep hearing that. And I think if you show them what you're saying, I think that will be different to help them really understand what you're talking about. I just remember one time when I was in a forest and I was with Wes. Wes is the chimp that looks like miles from the west. So Wes has been...
What's his name? Wes.
Yeah, Wes. Yeah, so I was with Wes that day and he actually tried to talk to me, like telling me that there was an elephant behind me, but I definitely never understood because he was resting and I was resting. But he was facing me. I was up the hill. He was down the hill. He was facing up the hill. And then I was facing him. I was waiting for him to move so I could follow him. But by then I wasn't filming. I was still doing the data, the research work. And so this went that. And then I saw him get up. And he was like, Wes, is it time to go? Because I do that. I talk to them, but of course me talking, I know they want to listen. They don't understand what I'm saying, but it's a way of not feeling alone. It's a way of me not feeling that I'm alone. So I have someone, I have a chimp, so I know his name. You know what? It's weird. Yeah. So, I was like, okay, where is this time to go? Wes got up, gave me a straight gaze. And then I was like, what's going on? But then he stayed looking at me for like 2 minutes. And then I wasn't really getting what he was trying to say. And for like after 2 minutes, he backed at me. And then I had to turn back to see, to be like, why are you backing at me? To see if there was anything behind me. And in like 7 or less meters, there was a very big elephant behind me. So I think all along he was trying to say, an elephant is coming towards you. There's an elephant coming. And I wasn't getting that. So when I did, I grabbed my bag and everything. I ran towards where I was coming from. And then Wes also ran away, I think. So he was waiting for me so we could run away together. But I didn't follow him. I took my own way because I was very scared. And then from when I was going alone, so I was trying to think up the hill because I left Wes and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe Wes has saved my life today. And then I was thinking, so like, okay, when I leave here, when I go out, I will have to tell my friends what Wes has done for me. And then when I came out, so I was telling my friends that, oh, this ship Wes did this. And then they are like, what? Is it that scary? How can that happen? They're not supposed to be there. So it was more of them scary. But to me, it was like, oh, it's actually nice. He saved my life, you know. So because from there, I started trusting him even more. Like if I sensed that they were like elephants, I would look around for other chimps. And if I find Wes, I would just go behind Wes. Because I know he cannot lead me to anything dangerous like elephants. Yeah, but.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's an amazing story.
Yeah. That's why I say like, I kind of have gotten to understand these chimps more than my own family. Not because they do understand me. I don't take it on that connection level, but I find them very special. Yeah.
Have you had a chance to talk to school children or anything when you come out of the forest about what you do? Because you were the first woman in 30 years to be a researcher,
yeah,
right?
That's true. It's a project that we are trying to, I want to get started in the community, but I don't think I need to talk to only the school children. I need to talk to all the people, to reach everyone. So we think of trying, I'm thinking of doing community screening. So because I think that even things that happen, like these cases of maybe poaching and maybe encroachment in the park, I think it happens because so many people every day are told to conserve or protect the wildlife, but they don't know what wildlife is. And so if you tell them about elephants, they only know the bad side of elephants. There's not a good side of elephants. So if you tell them about chimpanzees, trust me, like 90% of the people who live in the communities around know what the chimpanzee look like. So if we tell them to conserve, they don't know. Like, no one can conserve what they don't know. They need to be able to know what we are telling them. And I think if we have to bring out some films, oh my God. I think I am a mess. So my battery is running. I'm sorry.
No problem. Well, Diana, thank you so much. And in case we lose you, I want to just thank you so much for walking a kilometer to make it there where you could talk to us and be on that roof. And it was lovely to hear all the birds in the background. And it makes me miss Kibale even more talking to you. So thank you for doing this. I really, really appreciate it.
My pleasure. I'm just so happy to be able to talk to you. I was looking forward to this.
Yes. And let's do this again sometime, okay?
Yeah, sure. Definitely. Anytime. Just let me know.
Good. And I'd like to talk to you more at some time about your ideas about filming and affecting the community, because we have a project that we're doing. That we're doing in Cameroon, where we're actually going to make community films to show the villages, yeah, and with local filmmakers, yeah, and things. So I'd love to talk to you about that project.
Thank you. That would be really, really great. I'd love to be part of that because I think this part of filmmaking, of doing films, is a more way of making the people around us try to see what we see. I consider myself very, very lucky to get to know the chimpanzees and to know what I know, and happy that I got to get to be part of this chimp empire. And this is the dream that I got because I saw somewhere someone has done it. But people who have not seen this, they will never dream about that. And I think if they did, it would be an advantage for us to be able to combine efforts to conserve the wildlife, the nature around us, because it doesn't take one person to do this. And if someone doing it is someone the local people know, they would believe it and they would really easily embrace it and then don't think that it's not the thing they can't do. So, yeah. So I feel good. Yeah,
films have the opportunity to have a very powerful influence, I think.
That's true. So, yeah, very soon we are going to, I have a projector ready. So I'm going to, just getting a few other equipments and try to screen this in the communities and schools. So try to let people know about what wildlife is, and we tell them about animals, they should be able to see the parts of these animals there, so that maybe they can feel their reason to conserve. So if they know that a chimp cries when the other chimp dies, so they'll be like, okay, maybe they are just like us, you know. They just have to know that, and they will feel the need to be empathetic about them. And maybe slowly these things are poaching. Maybe we will let them go. They will stop. I would just have to make these people feel that they're doing a big part in their conservation. And when they stop doing certain things, it will just be
Unfortunately, we lost our connection to Diana abruptly, but promised to get her back uninterrupted in season 3 to talk more about her journey from becoming a young girl loving wildlife to becoming a major contributor both as a field assistant and a curious and passionate soul behind the camera lens. We'll have more about Diana and her story on our website at talkingapes.org, so join us there. You've been listening to our exclusive Talking Apes series, The Making of Chimp Empire from Behind the Scenes. Please check out the other podcasts in this 4-part series on our website at talkingapes.org. That's talkingapes.org, or on the streaming service you're now listening. You've been listening to Talking Apes, the podcast that gets to the heart of what's happening with and to apes like us. Our conversations are with folks from across this planet of apes. Writers, researchers, conservationists, scientists, all getting us closer to understanding who we are and why. Because ensuring the survival of the other 4 great apes is the only way to ensure our own. I would like to thank our entire Talking Apes team for all the work they do in bringing you this podcast. And I would like to thank you, the donors and Patreon members who make Talking Apes successful through your generous support and the sharing of this podcast. If you appreciate what you're hearing on Talking Apes, consider supporting us. Please visit our website at talkingapes.org. Finally, I would also like to thank the dedicated folks on the front line of great ape survival. We hope through Talking Apes we're able to shine a light on the incredible selfless work that you do every day to ensure great apes, primates, and their forest homes like Ngogo survive and thrive into the future. I'm Jerry Ellis. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing with family and friends the Talking Apes podcast.